Hello and welcome to the Gandhara, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Pakistan in Afghanistan. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host in Washington, D.C. He is too powerful to force out and too problematic to work with. In the face of increasing frustration in both ends, this is the way some Afghanistan watchers describe President Ashraf Ghani's dilemma with his own first Vice President General Abdulrashid Dostum. On the other hand, in recent days, we are witnessing an increasing frustration by General Dostum against his own boss, President Ashraf Ghani. As the top Afghan leadership remain engaged in infighting, security forces are increasingly challenged by the advancing Taliban, as such that today, militants are in offensive in 18 out of 34 Afghan provinces. Casualties are rising. Interest by the international communities in Afghanistan is decreasing. On this episode of Gandhara Podcast, we look into President Ghani's challenges in regard to General Dostum and General Dostum's frustration against the government and possible outcome and end to this ongoing leadership crisis in the unity government. To discuss the subject, I have Patricia Gossman, who is the senior Afghanistan researcher at the Human Rights Watch. Patty, welcome to the Gandhara.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to have you. Yaqub Rahmati, who is the former political advisor to General Dostum, is with us today. Mr. Rahmati, welcome to the Gandhara.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Abu Bakr Siddiq, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website, is joining us today. Gandhara looks into Pakistan in Afghanistan as a region. Abu Bakr, welcome to the Gandhara.
Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you. And Sultan Faizi, Kabul-based independent journalist, is joining us today. Mr. Faizi, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to have you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to the Gandhara podcast. Before to kick off the debate, though, let me remind you that please feel free to amplify, expand or disagree directly with the points other guests are making. Please don't wait for me to prompt your questions so that we have a lively debate today. Also bear in mind that today we will, of course, discuss some of the recent issues, but more than that, our objective is to understand each other's perspective on this matter. So with this, let's start with you, Mr. Faizi in Kabul. General Dostum is reportedly back to Kabul after months in his hometown in northern Afghanistan, but I hear that he returned with big number of his loyalist soldiers. At least this is what some reporting say. Everything is all right in Kabul?
Thank you very much. Well, yes, the Ministry of Defense has made it very clear that General Dostum has returned with his regular bodyguards and security guards that the Afghan government has already provided for him. However, he has traveled for several military operations to the north several times back during the 1 year or 6 months. And during his trips to the north, he has already, you know, had these troops or forces. So this has been considered, or this has been told to the media, that he has not been recruited by fresh troopers. So everything looks normal in Kabul, but what we can see in the city is that there have been some security alert that could have come via some, you know, reports or threats that is, you know, addressing the city. However, we had twin explosions a couple hours ago. So it is on a state of alert. And there have been several other issues other than, you know, the presence of, you know, the troops, you know, belonging to General Dostum.
Also, let me remind to our audience that Mr. Faizi in the past was affiliated with General Dostum as a media relations advisor before turning to journalism. Since he returned from an important mission in the north, Mr. Faizi, did General Dostum had a chance to meet the president?
So far, I have been monitoring that he has met some tribal elders, some of the party his party leaders or managing directors, but I haven't heard any discussion between him and the president. But it seems like things have not gone tough, and it doesn't look like the problem that that have been addressing General Dostum, which was like he was accused of beating rival or raping rival. That's not on the top of the news nowadays. And it looks like tensions have slowed down or decreased. It doesn't look like problems are really still continue. So the only thing is that he's showing that he's here in Kabul. He has been meeting some people, and things are okay.
Abu Bakr, let me bring you here. The fact that General Dostum came to Kabul after a long time, after an important mission, and then also given the recent controversies involving his personality, so far did not had a chance to meet President Ghani, or President Ghani did not invite him for a meeting. What kind of signal does this present?
Well, the thing is that I won't claim that I'm an insider in the presidential palace, and I do get to read the president's mind, but there are a few larger questions which we must include in this discussion. One is the whole question of impunity. I mean, in Afghanistan, very few people have been held accountable for their past crimes or allegations of committing particularly grave crimes against humanity, war crimes. I'm not saying that General Dostum is the only one that can be accused of such atrocities or his past role. But I think there are other issues, more current issues, which is the whole question of the viability of the power-sharing agreement, where you have, in essence, this kind of diarchical arrangement where in reality, there are kind of two administrations at the same time. One is President Ghani and his team, and then Abdullah and his people. And there is always a lot of back and forth, a lot of politicking going on. And then the third issue is this recent issue of specific allegations against Vice President Dostum of abusing a former governor, Eschi. We also must discuss in this whole issue, in today's discussion, the whole question of transitional justice. You can't have true reconciliation in Afghanistan without some kind of transitional justice.
Abu Bakr, obviously, that is one of the topics that today we would like to address. And also, you hinted that when we are talking about the atrocities and crimes that allegedly committed in the past, that Dostum is not only individual to be discussed. During the long years of civil war, crimes are committed, violations are made, and obviously, they continue the case even today. So we are going to talk about that. First, I just wanted to address just one more question regarding the tension between President Ghani and General Dostum. So the fact that Mr. Rahmati, I want to invite you to take the stage now, that recently Mr. Dostum had harsh statement against both President Ghani and Abdullah. What lies behind his recent frustration?
As I was saying, General Dostum is the only leader fighting against the Taliban in the battlefield in the north, and other leaders just sitting in their warm palaces from far away and doing nothing about it. There were times, as you know, that the soldiers were running out of ammunition, and they kept calling for help from the capital. They did not respond in time, and so many horrible things happened. We lost so many good soldiers.
Yes, I understand that Dostum is quite often voluntarily goes to the battlefield, but again, is it his job to go there in the first place?
No, you see, one thing you have to understand is Badghis province and Faryab, especially, those are the corridors, which is very important. If Faryab, for example, if it falls, then the rest of the provinces in the north will follow. So for General Dostum, it's important the Taliban away from those areas.
I have to press you, Mr. Rahmati, on this. But again, his presence on the battlefield is also undermining the Afghan army's rule, because they are the ones who has to lead the fight if there is a such requirement, not the Vice President Dostum, isn't it?
Yes, you could say that, but the thing is, unfortunately, some of the government soldiers, they don't take orders. When the General Dostum orders them, they just refuse it. And they say, well, look, from the palace, certain people are calling not to attack. So it's a terrible situation. It's very difficult to analyze. And you could say that it's a power struggle. You know, they don't want General Dostum to succeed in his mission to bring peace and harmony in all over Afghanistan. And I would like to let the world know. You see, since the time of Alexander the Great, 15 major invasions and 40 minor invasions have taken place. None of them were able to conquer us and subdue us. And in the future, nobody will. I think maybe from now on, we should erect walls around Afghanistan or erect signs saying, hey, if you come as a friend, you're more than welcome. But if you come as an enemy, try to invade our land and take away our freedom and independence, we will fight you. And we have proven over and over in the last century, the Russians, and the century before that, the British. And now in this century, 44 countries had soldiers stationed in Afghanistan, and they could not succeed. They could not defeat the Taliban. But General Dostum is the only man, the only hope that can bring that peace. As you probably know, a few years back, General Dostum asked the UN permission to get rid of all the Taliban from Afghanistan within 6 months. They refused. And then here in North America, I know this gentleman, I don't want to mention his name or the country he is from. He's a member of parliament, and I asked him, he was a friend of mine. I said, what happened? United Nations forces, they could not defeat the Taliban. Here's a man volunteering to fight back and defeat. How come they're not allowing it? Just want to make it short. If we let General Dostum to get rid of the Taliban from Afghanistan, then he will come to us and say, look, your task is over, and please leave. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to leave Afghanistan.
I understand. The part of the allegations which made against General Dostum recently also comes from the time when he is on the battlefield. I'm particularly hinting towards the case of Ahmed Ishchi. Patricia, what is the Human Rights Watch's stance on the recent issue involving Mr. Ishchi?
Well, let me speak to the larger question, if I could. In response to the last point that was made, I think it's actually a fallacy to suggest that any of the efforts that have been made that involve using militias and engaging in abuses on the battlefield are what is needed to turn the tide of the war. In fact, the evidence is precisely in the other direction, that abusive behavior just sows resentment and, actually can breed support for the Taliban in areas where militia forces have been abusive and exploitative. And we've seen that time and again, especially throughout northern Afghanistan. So this is just simply not true. The next point I'd like to make is that, and in response to another point that was made, which is, I think, believe correct, this is, it's not something where we can really just say that General Dostum is some kind of an anomaly in Afghanistan. Sadly, that's not the case at all. While he might represent a certain pattern of impunity in Afghanistan, he's far from the only one. The real problem isn't necessarily tension between Dr. Abdullah and Dr. Ghani and the government. It's more between the state as conceived in terms of the actual administration in Kabul and a kind of larger state that includes strongmen and powerful figures that maintain their own forces and act outside the law to fulfill their own desires or to establish a kind of a fiefdom in Afghanistan. And so you can name any number of people that this would apply to, including Dostum's chief rival, Governor Atta, who is himself responsible and for militia forces that have committed atrocious abuses, and General Razik in Kandahar, and Miralam in Kunduz and Piram Kul in Takhar, and you know, the list goes on and on. And the problem is that these strongmen, whether you call them warlords or whatever, some of them are government officials, and they operate without any accountability to the Afghan people, to the rule of law. And it's only if Afghanistan can build and maintain the kind of institutions that hold its own officials to account that you can have a stable and secure state. And I think that's well known and well established. You know, President Ghani has written about it himself. But over and again, we see this response to the conflict, which is one based on expediency and allowing militia forces to form and trying to basically shortchange the rule of law in the pursuit of some kind of short-term stability. And it doesn't work. You cannot build a stable state without the rule of law.
Patricia, this is happening in front of the eyes of everyone, including the Western countries who are kind of guarantor of the stability in Afghanistan.
Well, the Western countries have been party to it because some of them supported these very figures because they were based, they had their PRTs in this place or that place. They wanted to get their projects carried out, so they work with local strongmen and warlords in order to carry out their projects and keep the funds flowing, which only meant that a lot of these, officials and others enriched themselves over the past 15 years, further entrenched themselves as the most powerful figure in their area, which makes it that much more difficult now to hold them accountable.
In that sense, Abu Bakr, President Ashraf Ghani, he was not the party to any previous actions that were committed during the civil war. And he started with a clean page in Afghanistan, and the expectations were that he will remain clean and he will enforce what he believes in strongly in democracy. But what is your take, what is your judgment on the way he is handling this? Because all these things, what Patricia mentioned, is happening under his leadership, in a way.
Well, I think, in my view, it's wrong to expect from one person without actually the institutional support, the kind of state that is needed to bring about a revolution or kind of massive implement reforms. I think Ashraf Ghani has been trying to respond to kind of what is the political reality, real politics in Afghanistan. That's why he allied with Dostum, because Dostum has a solid voting bloc among his co-ethnic Uzbeks in northern Afghanistan, or maybe his party members of his Jumbish or supporters of his Jumbish party. And I think Ghani came into power in an era of transition when, obviously, in 2014, the NATO combat mission ended. And the next year, in 2015, the Afghan forces were on their own fighting a widening and more violent Taliban insurgency. And I think that this whole concept of the new national unity government revolves around expediency. Unfortunately, in Afghanistan, what has not happened, which is probably to my mind will be slightly easy to do, is to have a kind of, if transitional justice is not possible or that kind of institutional building is not possible, building the rule of law, at least what can happen is to have some kind of truth and reconciliation commission. And that is something that Ghani, again, is not in his priority. I mean, his number one priority in office was to somehow restore peace and stability. And the way he tried to do it was to reaching out to Pakistan. And that process, unfortunately, failed. So we are, in a way, in this kind of vicious circle where for people in power and their supporters, primarily in the West now, the priority is to prevent the Afghan state from collapsing again, which means that you have to turn a blind eye to a lot of the abuses, a lot of this kind of independent behavior, and also keeping at least the Afghan forces or the Afghan security forces intact, so they are able to withstand or at least prevent major population centers from falling to the hands of insurgents.
Okay, thank you very much, Abu Bakr Siddiq. Let's take a short break here. When we will come back, we will continue discussion on this topic with focus on future of Ghani-Dostum relations after recent tension and the future of the Afghan unity government shortly. But first, just to recap the debate, in today's discussion, I'm joined by Patricia Gosman, the senior Afghanistan researcher at the Human Rights Watch, Yaqub Rahmati, former political advisor to General Dostum, Sultan Faizi, Kabul-based journalist, Abubakar Siddiq, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website, which looks into Pakistan in Afghanistan. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Gandhara podcast here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Gandhara podcast. Now, before the break, we were talking about some of the alleged recent controversies surrounding Afghan Vice President General Dostum and some of the other provincial and local leaders. As the controversies are rising, we see frustrations are emerging in both ends. Recently, General Dostum was so frustrated that he accused President Ghani in tribalism, and there were reactions by the president's office. Mr. Rahmati, has the fundamental causes for his frustration answered by the president?
Not as far as I know so far, no. But I'm sure they will resolve the issues that they have, the difficulties that they have. I mean, Mr. Ghani is the president and General Dostum is first vice president. I'm sure, they will resolve.
When I was listening to him speaking from northern Afghanistan, he was also talking about possibility of sitting in opposition benches in case if his demands are not met. I want to believe that those are not just an empty threat. He genuinely means that, right?
No, I think then, of course, after what you heard, and then he backtracked it and said these things happen between the leaders, and he doesn't have a problem with Mr. Ghani. So, it's you who can say, who can believe it in different ways. Yeah. But I think those issues between General Dostum and Mr. Ghani would be resolved.
Abubakar, recently Atta Noor, the acting governor of Balkh, came up in the picture saying that, in fact, the post of the first vice president was offered to him. You had a story on this topic. Did this development have to do anything with the recent controversies involving General Dostum?
Well, General Dostum's office, I think, kind of reacted very angrily. But what Atta actually said, he said that somebody mentioned this possibility. So, in fact, it was never a formal offer from President Ghani's office. And that's what President Ghani's office letter said, made clear. So Atta's case is actually very different. It has a lot to do with kind of a separate power struggle within his Jamiat-e-Islami party. You know that Jamiat-e-Islami party has mainly three leadership components. One was previously based in Panjshir, which is still the dominant faction, kind of led by Abdullah now, or represented by Abdullah, and also Ahmad Zia Masood. And then there is Atta Muhammad Noor is another kind of major power leadership figure. And then in Western Afghanistan, there is former energy minister Ismail Khan. So the struggle is between Abdullah and Atta. What Atta is essentially discussing with President Ghani, as far as we know, and what the two sides have told us, is that some kind of a new power sharing agreement with Jamiat Party. But there is a lot of disagreement within Jamiat about what it will mean. And Abdullah and Atta are clearly on opposing side of this divide. But we also have to remember that Atta and Dostum are key rivals. So any changes will inevitably, if Atta comes to, for example, the presidential palace in Kabul, it will affect Dostum. But it's not clear, what will the impact be, and will there be a new power-sharing agreement between President Ghani and Atta or Jamiat?
Mr. Siddiqui, if you don't mind me interrupting, General Dostum is the vice president of Afghanistan, not by selection or personal giving, but rather has been elected by the voters. So no one can take away his position from him. This will be against the will of the people of Afghanistan. We have to respect that. We have to respect the people.
I absolutely agree with you. I didn't say that somebody is taking. I was just referring to the ongoing power sharing agreement. And I clearly said that it is not about Dostum's position. It doesn't directly involve him. I even made clear the statements from the two sides. So I think we are in agreement here.
So what the future looks like for Vice President Osman, President Ashraf Ghani alliance going forward from here? Who wants to take question?
Well, I would like to say that I think that as far as we know, the National Unity Government was put together by outgoing U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. So I don't see any major changes in the National Unity Government immediately, but I think there are a number of suggestions, propositions that people are working in. I'm sure that all the parties involved in these discussions would like to keep everyone on board. So we might see, for instance, some cabinet changes or something, but as far as I know, none of the people involved are pushing for a loya jirga or revisiting those, but Afghanistan clearly has major political challenges. One of the key challenges is that the country needs to hold parliamentary elections soon, and the country also needs to defend itself against the Taliban onslaught, the massacre, the attack we saw in Kabul. That kind of violence the Afghan state needs to stop, to survive essentially. So I think the future is still open. I mean, we have to watch this Ahmad Eschi's legal case and what kind of investigations are done and where it moves, where it goes, essentially.
It's good that you mentioned the Eschi's case, Abu Bakr. Patricia, during the difficult political times like today in Afghanistan, human rights are unfortunately pushed to the backseat often. What are the President Ghani's option to address some of these issues?
Well, you know, I think the thing is, President Ghani has made a lot of promises, even in this case of Mr. Eschi, and what we have not yet seen is him following through on some of them. You know, it's been 2 years now since he launched a plan to eliminate torture, and yet torture has grown, is widespread in MDS and police facilities. He promised to investigate all these cases of journalists who've been assaulted, in some cases killed. None of these cases has even begun, and let alone have there been any prosecutions. There are any number of promises he's made in the area of human rights, even on transitional justice. He was one of the ones, as was mentioned earlier, that initially spoke in favor of some kind of a reconciliation process. But instead, we're seeing when Zardari returned to Kabul, basically he's granted the amnesty law that everyone else has received. So there's a lot of rhetoric, but there's not a lot of action. And the failure to address these, now, it was going to undermine stability in the long run, and I think he is aware of that. But some action needs to be taken in this regard, or he'll find his problems multiplying, unfortunately.
What do you think the reason behind his failure, let's say, to address some of these issues?
Well, it comes back to the same issue I mentioned before, and I have to agree with previous speakers that it's not an easy situation. I mean, he came in 2014. Where many of these problems are already deeply entrenched, and not the least because of the policy U.S. and other countries, but particularly the U.S., had followed for many years after 2001, which meant relying on people with very poor track records in human rights to be a force of stability, which in many cases they were not. And so confronting this power structure is extremely difficult. At the same time, beginning to take some steps in this regard would go a long way to restoring the legitimacy of the government's intentions in terms of protecting ordinary Afghans' human rights. The Attorney General seems to have made a bit of progress beginning in terms of prosecuting corruption cases. That's a good sign. We'd like to see that kind of progress in terms of human rights cases as well.
You genuinely believe that Mr. Ghani, President Ghani, is interested to address those issues, right?
I think he knows the right thing to do, whether he will do it, whether the power structure around him will allow that to happen, is another question.
Is there any rule that that the West can play, which so far has not been
played? Of course. They should. They are the ones still paying for the Afghan security forces. And so all the training in the world means nothing if no one's held to account for abuses. So they should be sending this signal loud and clear. Unfortunately, too many of them have not done so.
Yeah, unfortunately, all this, again, comes down to the political situation, political willing situation in the country. So today, it's not only Dostum, but Tajik leaders are also seems to be having their own set of issues, though recently quite, but President Ghani and Dr. Abdullah has their own pending problems. How do you see a future of unity government as a whole, Mr. Rahmati?
Security, peace and security, and realizing that all Afghans have equal rights is very important. The thing is, if you go to, let's say, any ministry in Kabul, if you look at their background, their nationalities, you know, whether they're Pashtuns, Tajiks, Uzbeks, Hazaras, and so on, we found in Kabul that only 1% of those ministries were Uzbeks or Turkoman. This is not the way to keep people happy of the situation. I live in a country like 24% of the population are French, and the remaining 76% are English. There is no problem. There is no civil war between them. According to their population, the percentage of the population, they receive what they deserve. And of course, that's why the country is progressing. I have been living in North America for 47 years. That's a long time. And I have seen so many advances, like factories being built and jobs are being created, which is amazing. I wish we could do the same. Like before the election, Ashraf Ghani's team mentioned that after the election, they will create 500,000 jobs within 6 months. I would be happy if they created even 500. And it's not so difficult to create jobs. Rather than fighting amongst each other and killing each other, and let's sit down and make senses and be civilized and the needy people of Afghanistan.
Why it's not happening if that is so easy?
You see, the problem is the problem that we have is at the top. Mr. Ghani should say, okay, according to the percentage of the population, for example, the Uzbeks and Turkmens are 20% of the population. Here are the 20% of the seats be given to you, and you can hire people that they need jobs. And same thing with the Pashtuns, whatever percentage that they have, or the Tajik. But the problem is, no, one particular nationality wants everything for themselves, and that's not going to work. It's not the way to proceed.
Abu Bakr, is it the main issue here?
Well, I think the larger issues in Afghanistan's first challenge is, of course, to establish peace and security. And you can't have lasting peace and security without the rule of law. Afghanistan has its constitution. The country needs to follow that constitution. I clearly hear where Mr. Rahmati comes from. Of course, all the minorities needs to have their share. But the fact is, for that to happen, there has to be reforms in the current power structures. And a lot of the current people in power have blocked those reforms. They've come up with amnesty laws, absolving themselves of all wrongdoing. They have been wearing different hats during various phases of the current Afghan history, where they have, for example, been from a communist general to a leader of a particular region or ethnic group, and that kind of stuff. And then, of course, people who have fought in the name of Islam or leaders of Islamist groups, and now claiming credit for a lot of other things. So what is clearly needed today is for Afghans to have open discussion, open debate. I'll go back to the idea of truth and reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And I think on the larger leadership level, what we need is that President Ghani's government, among its other failures, have also failed in delivering a very clear, consistent message. It is a government that needs to act as one unit. And for that, unity and understanding among its top officials, which obviously includes President Ghani and his first vice president, is absolutely essential.
Interesting. Unfortunately, we also need to wrap up our discussion. But finally, Patricia, we are entering to interesting time here in the United States that which might lead even more decline in international interest in the Afghan affairs going forward. So in this situation, what is the ideal path for Afghan leadership to go from here?
Well, the ideal path is... I think you're right that we're in a very uncertain period in terms of the West, both Europe and the United States, but particularly the United States. You know, within a very short period of time, 10 days, we will embark on a new era in American politics, and we don't know what that will mean for Afghanistan. I think, sadly, the war will continue, and there needs to be, of course, primary concern here is the rising toll of civilians in this conflict. Every year has set a new record. And so I think the message to Afghanistan's leaders is that they need to address this. They are losing generations once again. And Afghanistan's been through too many decades of lost generations and to be able to build on a stable and secure future. So this would be the message. They can't afford the squabbling, the dysfunctionality, and the rest. They need to think about the needs of the Afghan people, including their most basic human rights, and shape their policies accordingly, and not based on the interests of strongmen, ethnic rivalries, and other concerns that don't really meet the needs of the people.
Thank you very much. Nicely concluded, Patricia Gossman, the senior researcher on Afghanistan at the Human Rights Watch, for your participation today to the show. And a big thanks goes to Yaqub Rahmati, former political advisor to General Dostum, and Abu Bakr Siddiq, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website, and also Sultan Faizi, whom we lost in the middle. But thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us today on the Gandhara podcast.
Thank you.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, your host in Washington, D.C. Until the next podcast, bye-bye.